I'm speaking today with Ann Johnson, who is running for State House in District 134. Ann, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
I grew up here in Houston. I have been a former prosecutor with the Harris County District Attorney's Office, and I absolutely loved serving our community and representing victims and standing up for community safety. I left that job when I was diagnosed with cancer, and today I most often represent children in court. I am seeing the impact of the decisions made in the budget last session on children through the cuts to public education and health, and I feel very strongly that we have got to turn this ship around and make sure that we are truly investing in children. And so that is why I'm running.
Tell me about a little bit about your background in being an advocate for children. I mean, there's a case that gets cited. It's on your website. It was in the news. I'm failing to remember the details off the top of my head, but you know what I'm talking about. Talk a little bit about that and more generally the work you've done as an advocate for children and the effects you say you've seen since the budget cuts.
Right. I am appointed by the courts to represent juveniles, and one of the most important cases that I worked on was when I was appointed to challenge the prosecution of a 13-year-old child for prostitution. And having been a former prosecutor, the prosecution did not make sense to me because it was a basic legal argument that a child cannot consent to sex with an adult. Yet that was the very basis of the prosecution. It took years to get that case to the Supreme Court, but I am proud to tell you that the court ruled in that child's favor, creating a landmark decision that protects all children from exploitation and human trafficking. So that is a wonderful landmark decision written by Justice Harriet O'Neill. It's a great case, and it really gives us a framework for how we can proceed in the future with protecting these children. Every day when I'm in court, I come in contact with juveniles that are brought into the system, and at least from my perspective, there is a common theme when you look at the information that's being presented with regard to their education level. Either they're not at grade level where they should be, or oftentimes you may discover that their IQ is not where it should be for the grade level. And I see that connection on a daily basis that we often hear, which is it costs us so much less to educate a child than it does to incarcerate an adult. And that is my fear. Right now, our children were 43rd in graduation rates, 45th in SAT scores, and we lead the nation with adults without a high school diploma. And that was before the cuts. For the first time in Texas history, our children are projected to be less prosperous than we are. And I know that we need someone next session who will truly make public education a priority and make sure that we're not cutting back $500 per child.
And let's talk about the public education cuts. $5.4 billion cut from public education. The House actually voted for almost twice that much to be cut. You know, what everyone is going to say, at least what everyone in the legislature is going to say, is that, you know, we don't have the money. Mm-hmm. You know, as you know, there is a structural shortfall based on the 2006 property tax cuts. What do we need to do to ensure that public education has the funding it needs?
The formula that's been created for public education is not performing, and there is that structural deficit. I believe that we need to make an immediate quick fix and make sure that we're getting things corrected, because it is critical not to create irreparable harm to an entire generation of Texans. Last session, there was an opportunity to use rainy day funds that were put in place for when there was an economic downturn. And if last session wasn't that opportunity or that case, I don't know what would be. There were $500 cut per child, and there was an opportunity to at least dip into those funds to make sure we were not getting people cut back. We have got to make sure that we truly make public education a priority and keep the funding up to each level for each child that is needed. I do believe that we can find better long-term approaches. Examples of those are my work in the criminal justice system and my interaction with alternative courts that are finding better practices, more efficient and effective methods. And I think that we could probably do the same thing when it comes to education. to make sure that we are reforming the public education system so that we are being the most effective and efficient. But cutting $500 per child and increasing class sizes is not the way to do it, which is what they did last session.
But ultimately, it does come down to revenue as well. I mean, that the property tax cut of 2006 mm-hmm. was supposed to have been offset by a variety of sources, including the business margins tax, an increase on the cigarettes tax, and some other things. From the beginning, I mean, Comptroller Strayhorn said at the time, numbers didn't balance, and she's been proven correct. You know, it's a multi-billion dollar shortfall every 2 years because what we created to replace the revenue lost in that property tax cut hasn't performed. Where do we find more revenue?
I think one opportunity is to look at the Texas tax code in the same way we would do with other state agencies, where we sunset and have everything reviewed to say, are we being the most efficient and effective that we can be? We haven't done that with any of the tax exemptions that have been sitting there. And I do have a question about this current leadership and the fact that last session you had the Republicans cutting $5.4 billion in public education, when at the same time a member was offering a tax exemption for the sale and purchase of $2 million yachts. I say let's look back at the tax code and see if there are any other exceptions that have put in there that when we weigh them against cutting public education, we say which is more fair and which is better for our state. That's something that needs to be done, and that's something that can be done, and I believe is the best place to start.
Let's also talk about health care, because mm-hmm. you know, the rainy day fund has already largely been earmarked for underfunding in Medicaid.
Right.
First of all, you know, as you know, and as a result of the Supreme Court decision, Texas has now been given the option of not expanding Medicaid, and that is the direction that the state is going in. Please comment on that and tell me what you think will be the effect of that.
Personally, I am a cancer survivor, and I've benefited from being able to go down the street and get treatment in the greatest medical community in the world. Last session, the budget cut Health and Human Services by 17.2%, and they too were feeling the effects of those budgetary decisions. Today, we are faced with an opportunity through health care reform to have potentially $76 billion come back to Texas that is our money that could come back to be used in the medical community. That's not only a good thing for our economy, but that's a good thing for helping to cure this issue of having the highest number of uninsured Texans, or highest number of uninsured in our state throughout the nation. That's an area that must be addressed and must be fixed. We should accept that $76 billion, and we should have it come into the system, and we should make sure that we are funding that system properly. I would not turn down our money, because if we turn down our money is going to get sent to New Jersey or California, and then we're going to pay again. Because the reality is the uninsured who are going into our emergency rooms are still being taken care of based on our local property tax dollars. And I believe that there's about $500 million that Harris County taxpayers are paying to cover those costs. It seems unreasonable to me to not be willing to work for what's best for Texans because of a partisan ideological position of Governor Perry.
One place that was particularly cut in this last session were funds for any kind of family planning. And Planned Parenthood gets a lot of the headlines, and certainly they were treated poorly by this past legislature. But all family planning funds across the board were cut, and I mean, the Texas Observer's got an article out about how a bunch of clinics that have nothing to do with Planned Parenthood are going out of business as a result of cuts from the legislature. What's going on with that?
Not just the cuts, but the recent rejection of our federal money that was due to come back.
You're talking about the Women's Health Program.
Yes, the Women's Health Program, and the fact that you had, once again, our tax dollars due to come back to serve 130,000 uninsured women, but it was rejected because of a partisan basis. Now, we've now heard that we're going to cover that on our own, but the question is, well, where is that going to come from? At the same time that you're cutting $500 per child for public education, you're now suggesting that there's going to be more money to fill in this need. We absolutely need to serve and provide for women's health. Rejecting our own money and not funding what is an essential component to if we can keep people educated and if we can keep people healthy, they will take care of the rest of it. To deny our citizens that opportunity because of extreme partisanship is unbelievable.
There's also apparently a controversy over proposed rules for the replacement program for the women's health program that would prevent doctors from discussing abortion services in any way. The Texas Medical Association has objected to this. Right. In fact, your opponent has said that she doesn't care for those rules either. What's your take on this?
Well, of course, I don't care for the rules. I don't care for the intrusion of the doctor-patient relationship. But I also believe that if you defund the program and you cut out, there's no relationship to protect.
Okay. One of the hot-button issues from 2011 that looks likely to raise its head again in 2013 is the so-called sanctuary cities legislation, in which the state would mandate cities to enforce immigration law. What's your position on this issue?
Well, immigration is a federal issue. And having worked in the criminal justice system, I can tell you that things are busy and that our police officers are doing a lot of work. To ask them to add another component to their job, which is a federal issue, I don't think is a fair thing to do or to place an additional burden on our local criminal justice system.
As someone who worked in the criminal justice system, you know, Texas has a reputation of being tough on crime, and we have a large prison population, which is now in decline. The Department of Criminal Justice takes up a big chunk of the budget. Mm-hmm. And yet legislatures tend to, when they go to Austin and they pass criminal justice related bills, it tends to be for making things crimes or enhancing penalties, which puts pressure in the other direction. You know, as someone who's been a prosecutor, you know, what would your priorities be in matters of criminal justice as a legislator?
This comes back to that concept of investing wisely on the front end. And that, as I mentioned, it costs us far less to educate a child than it does to incarcerate an adult. And I believe that we have to get back to that focus and making sure that we give everybody an opportunity to be a productive member of our community and contribute to our tax base and be able to be law-abiding. For those people that are in the criminal justice system, we need to have a system that is set up to keep the people that need to be there and to not have a revolving door where people are coming in and out. And I believe you have to do both to accomplish that goal. You have to make sure that our community is educated, because that educated population is less likely to end up in the criminal justice system, and that will alleviate that significant burden. And we also need to make sure that we're providing the right kind of services to keep people out of that revolving door of coming in and out of the criminal justice system. I am proud to have worked on two alternative courts, and people can be proud to know that there's good work happening in Harris County to come up with new, effective, efficient means. And I believe that these courts are incredibly successful. For example, you may have somebody that comes in, and under this alternative approach, they are given the types of tools that help them not only succeed today, but succeed in the future. That keeps them from coming back within the criminal justice door. That's effective, that's efficient, and that's where I believe we need to start putting our focus into the criminal justice system.
The truth is that for most legislators, a lot of the legislation they introduce and attempt to get passed tends to focus on, you know, strictly local issues, often fairly non-controversial stuff, though not always the case. What do you see as what local issues pertaining to District 134 do you see as being priorities that you would want to address in the legislature?
One of the things that I love about this district, and growing up here in Houston, living in this district, there is a wonderful, diverse community. But from my visiting with people that live here, I believe they are ready for Texas to do better. And I believe they are tired of the partisanship that we have seen recently in gutting some of the most important and essential services in education and in health. I am ready to be this district state representative. to work not only what's best for the district, work across party lines and try to make sure that we're accomplishing what is good for everybody. That's what people are talking with me about today, and they get it. If we do not invest in our children, they can't compete for the high technology jobs that we not only need today, but we need for tomorrow. If we are not educating our children, we can't hope to sustain a good economy. And for the first time, as they know, their children are projected to be less prosperous than we are, they want a change in direction. And from that perspective, they want to know that they've got somebody that's going to go up there and stand up to the partisanship that has created this situation and make sure and take a stand for the children of this district and for the people of this district.
Okay. District 134 was not affected as much as some other districts in redistricting. A few changes here and there. As you know, D.C. court has still not ruled on Texas's preclearance lawsuit, and I think there's a very good chance that the districts we have now are going to be different for the next election. You know, what is your opinion of the job that was done in redistricting 134, and what, if any, changes do you think should be made by the courts?
I would hope that the courts and that the legislature would continue to follow what is a fair opportunity and make sure that we're following the Civil Rights Act. As far as this district, I'm happy to be running in the district. Whichever lines they chopped up, I'm in, and I'm ready to represent the people of District 134. Because as I just mentioned, they want someone who will stand up for them as a whole, not a partisan position. And so I'm happy with meeting with the folks that are in this district. I'm looking forward to having an opportunity to represent them next session and continue to do what I believe is the fair thing to do for this district next session and what will benefit us in the long run.
If you're elected, you would join Mary Gonzalez, who has not yet been elected but is nominated and has no opponent in November, as one of two openly gay members in the legislature. Talk to me a little about what that means to you and where you think Texas is going in terms of equality matters.
Well, obviously, I oppose discrimination in any form, and I support equality. The reason I decided to run for this office and the reason that I will be proud and looking forward to be there next session is to be able to stand up and be an advocate for children when it comes to the cuts that have been made to their schools and public education, and to be able to stand up for the parents who have asked to give the schools support, which was rejected last session when they were cut by $5.4 billion. Those are the things that people are speaking with me about now. And I believe if we do that, it is fair to every citizen of Texas, regardless of race, gender, or anything else. And that's what I'm looking forward to having an opportunity to serve.
All right, then. Sum it up for me. Give me your best elevator pitch. When people go to vote this November, why should they vote for Ann Johnson to be the next representative in District 134?
Because people in this district are looking for somebody who will make sure that you're truly dedicated to doing the best thing for Texas children and Texas economy. There are going to be critical issues next session with regard to public education, with regard to women's health, with regard to general health, and with regard to setting up a foundation that will serve for a strong economy in the long run. That is the candidate that I am, and that is what I will do. I will not stand for cuts to our school system. I will not stand for the cuts, the $500 cuts that have been made to children, for the overcrowded class sizes that they are now being subjected to, and I will make sure that we create a public education system that is truly accountable to making sure that they will be successful in the future. That's the best thing for Texas. When I was growing up, my parents have taught me the honor of public service, but they also raised me in a Texas where we wanted to lead the nation and not settle for being last. And at the moment, statistically, we are dragging the bottom of the barrel when it comes to these critical issues of education and health. And I will be a stand for getting back to leading the nation and not settling or following.
All right. Ann Johnson, thank you very much for talking to me today.